Tonight I'd like to offer some words of reflection on the Buddhist way of coping with the situation that we find ourselves in the world today, with the war in Iraq. Someone pointed out to me that people are probably at saturation point about the war, but I feel that it's important to reflect on these things in the light of the Buddha's teachings. According to the Four Noble Truths, the first of the Four Noble Truths is that life is inherently, by its nature, unsatisfactory and imperfect. And so the fact that we have a war happening somewhere in the world is not unusual or extraordinary in terms of the Buddhist approach to life. The Second Noble Truth says that suffering arises because of our self-centered desire, craving, tanha in Pali. And that the cause of strife in the world doesn't lie in any particular group or any particular country. It lies in the hearts of men and women. And in the nature of existence itself, not only men and women are struggling for survival, are struggling out of self-interest, but it's the nature of existence to be that way. So in Buddhism, the emphasis is on the individual taking responsibility for their own peace and well-being. That doesn't mean that one strives for one's peace and well-being at the expense of others. And this is what is fundamentally different about the Buddhist approach to life, with its emphasis on individual responsibility, compared to the modern emphasis on self-actualization and self-centered realization of one's own potential. In Buddhism, although it is up to the individual to work for their own salvation, to work for their own enlightenment, this effort should not be at the expense of others. And there's no justification to be found in the Buddha's teaching for working in a way that is going to exploit or harm others. In today's materialistic culture, in the culture of me, 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 this self-actualization is all right, even if it is at the expense of others. In social relationships, it doesn't matter who gets hurt in order to pursue one's desires, to fulfill one's pleasures. And this extends to the economic relationships that are flourishing in modern society, where the bottom line is profit. It doesn't matter if it's at the expense of the workers or if it's at the expense of the environment or at the expense of society. The bottom line is profit. And if you are at the top or one of the people who can hold their own and you come out doing well, then good on you, even if it's at the expense of others. Buddhism isn't against success and economic prosperity, but the way that the individual exists in society is always in relationship to others and in relationship to the world around them. And so although one strives for success, one doesn't do that when it's going to be contrary to moral standards, when it's going to have consequences which are detrimental for oneself or others, and when one secures one's economic position, then it is one's duty to share one's prosperity, one's success with others. So whatever one accumulates is not only for one's own pleasure and gratification, but always with the idea that it should be shared. So in Buddhism, although there is this very strong emphasis on individual responsibility and each individual doing the best they can for themselves, it is a different kind of doing the best for themselves to what we are used to in the modern culture. The emphasis in the Dharma is that we are all interconnected and that we can't exist independent of others. And if we achieve our happiness and our success at the expense of others, then we're actually fouling our own nest, because eventually that is going to come back to us some way. And so we are constantly reflecting on what is going to happen as a result of what I think, speak and do, how I think, speak and act. Not just the immediate consequences, but the consequences in the future, and also not only for myself but for others. And when we're making decisions in our life, if we're practicing the Buddha's path, this is the kind of framework that we should be using. Because another one of the fundamental teachings of the Buddha is the teaching on cause and effect. Not only does nothing arise on its own, singly, without multiple causes and conditions bringing it into play, but the effect of that thing, whether it's an action, whether it's a choice, a decision that we make, that is going to have an effect which is going to be a new cause. And that new cause is going to in turn produce effects. And not just single effects, but just as the causes are multiple, the effects are going to be multiple also. And so it takes a lot of consideration, wise consideration, when we're making important decisions, when we're making important choices, to consider not only the consequences now but in the future, not only for ourselves but also for others, and not only the one that's obvious, the thing that we want to achieve, for example, but the flow-on effect of what it is that we're about to say or do. And if we're upholding the Buddha's principle of harmlessness, if we're trying to live within the boundaries of the five precepts, then we're going to have to make hard choices sometimes. That we're not going to get what we want. We're not going to be able to do what seems the easiest option because it's short-sighted, it's selfish, and it's going to have unhappy consequences for ourselves or others now or in the future. And if we're not prepared to look at that, then in the future we might be surprised at what pops up next because we haven't really considered what it is that we're putting into action. Now, this is important when we're considering what we're going to do and what's going to happen in the future, but it's also important when we consider where has this situation come from? What has produced the situation that we find ourselves in now? Very often we can find superficial answers to those questions. And very often we'll be happy with those superficial answers because it takes us off the hook. We don't have to look deeper to see how we've perhaps contributed through our actions or through our negligence or through our not being interested in what was happening to allow situations to come to a point where things get out of hand. And this is something particularly to consider in the situation where there is war. And very often people will say, well, what alternative is there? I mean, look how terrible this person is. Isn't it better to do something about this person and then we can have peace, then we can get on with our life? And last time I spoke here on the topic of making peace in our own heart, someone said to me afterwards, isn't it better to do something about one bad person to stop them from hurting thousands of others? And even if some innocent people have to get hurt in doing that, isn't that better than not doing anything? Now, of course, if you're one of the innocent people who's chosen to bear the brunt, you might think that there should be some other solution. Maybe we should look a bit harder. And this is a sort of scenario that's very often put to us as, well, what would you do as a Buddhist? What do you think about this? Surely you can see the sense in what needs to be done. And the first thing I would caution all of you to reflect on is that we should know from our experience of the Dharma that there is no easy solution to any of these complex problems. We all would like to find an easy solution to let us off the hook so we can get on with our life, so we don't have to think deeply. What can I do really in this situation to make the hard decisions that might take us out of our comfort zone? How is it that this situation got to this point and I didn't even know what was going on? I didn't even care what was going on until it came right into my own backyard. So, first of all, there's no simple solution. It's complex. The whole thing is complex. And we reflect again in terms of the Buddha's teaching on codependent arising. Because of this, there is that. Without this, that doesn't arise. But this arises because of that and that and that and that. And whatever we do is going to produce results that, and that. Not just one single result. The very simplistic idea that we can do one thing and get rid of one person and solve the problems It's very soothing to the mind sometimes because it means we can go back to our state of dullness, of not caring. So when we look in terms of the Buddha's teaching about life in general, we can see that to be asked, what's your view? What's the solution to this problem? Is asking something which is impossible to offer, particularly in a sentence, in 5 seconds. So what we have to do, if we really want to apply the teaching to this kind of situation, is not look for the comfortable solution, not look for the simple solution, not look for the one that's going to let us off the hook. That's if we really want to apply the teaching and we really want to learn from the kind of challenge that we all face in the situation at the moment. We may not face the challenge personally in a practical sense, but in our own heart, when we know that there are people in the middle of a war at the moment. But of course, if we reflect on that, we know that even if this war wasn't happening in Iraq, there are wars all over the place. There are people dying all over the place. There are people dying through not having enough to eat, not having clean water. So there's plenty of grist for the mill if we want to look at what can we do in this world to make it a better place and to live out our desire to live a good human life, to work for our own purification from greed, hatred, and delusion. When we consider that war is one of the alternative solutions that we have, when it becomes part of our repertoire of problem solving, then automatically our commitment to peace is reduced. The bottom line is no longer peace. The bottom line is let's get out of this situation as well as we can, and even if it costs a few lives. Now, the Buddhist teaching, the bottom line is harmlessness. And that harmlessness, the bottom line, extends to not acting. Not acting with aggression. Not acting even for the sake of protecting oneself. Now, this might seem extreme to you, but I just ask you to reflect if you can imagine in any circumstance the Buddha getting up and taking up a sword. Now, none of us here tonight is probably in the same category as the Buddha. We can all notice just how irritated we get when someone pushes in front of us in the supermarket. So I'm not saying that we should be holding ourselves as less or not good because we don't live according to that standard. But what I want to encourage you to open your mind to is that that is the ultimate standard. In the Second World War, when there were people who refused to participate in the war, they were very often accused of being cowards. And at that time, one of the conscientious objectors made a very powerful statement. They said, "I'm not afraid to die, but I am afraid to kill. And because of that, I can't participate in this war." So we can ask ourselves whether we are in that situation, whether we have come to that point. And we might find, no, I haven't. I would kill to protect, not myself, I'd kill to protect my family. I'd kill to protect someone that I really care about. I'd kill to protect someone who's innocent. So as that thought comes up, that is the very place where we start to reflect on the teaching, where we start to reflect on what is it that makes me feel that life at any cost is worth living? What is it that makes me think that living is going to be better than surrendering my life? If we have confidence in the Buddha's teaching on rebirth, for example, and we really believe that this isn't the only life that we have, and we're looking at maintaining our favourable human birth and conditions where we can continue to practice well, then we can ask ourselves, at the point of my death, what's going to be most supportive for that? What's most important in that last moment? Now, I'm not saying that these questions are easy questions or light questions. These are very deep and powerful reflections. And I'm stating them tonight to make it part of this whole debate about whether we should fight or not. Because it's very easy to make up ideas about what other people should do to other people, for other people, when it comes back to a consideration of what we would be prepared to do for ourselves and for the people around us, it's quite a different thing. And if we're prepared to reflect in this depth in our own heart, then I venture to say there's no way that we could include war as an option in solving the problems in the world, even if it's right on the other side of the world. We would strive to find an alternative. But once we admit war as one of the options, then we've already changed the whole playing field. Now, as Buddhists, we need to reflect on these things, because having taken refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma and the Sangha, we are expressing our aspiration to attain enlightenment. And we are saying that this is something which we hold as the highest value in our life. And so if we are really striving for enlightenment, then we have to look at what contributes to the realization of that state. And I'm not talking about making heroic efforts or heroic decisions that we're not ready to make. What I'm trying to encourage each of us to do is to work where we're at but not to deny where we're at, to deny our self-interest and the power of that self-interest to still drive our decision-making. If we're not sure about the Buddha's teaching, if we're not sure about enlightenment, then fair enough. But if in the deepest part of our heart we have made our commitment to this path, then we need to reflect very deeply. And this kind of situation that we face right now, not knowing what the consequences are going to be, thinking that we know that this is going to be a limited action, this is the kind of situation that brings the teaching right to life, right up close. If nothing else, it highlights the first noble truth. And what we need to do is to go deeper in our reflection to discover the second noble truth in our own experience. And to reflect and question whether we really believe the third noble truth, which is that there is a state of peace that can be attained, but not through worldly success or through altering worldly conditions. And the fourth noble truth, that there is a path which leads towards that state of peace, and it includes the cultivation of sila, morality, the cultivation of the mind, samadhi, and the development of wisdom, panya. And in that path of practice, the Noble Eightfold Path, the precepts, the standard of morality with harmlessness as the first, is an integral, central part of that path. So if we haven't come to that point where we're able to uphold that precept, this is the very time when we need to reflect. When we are challenged, when we don't have simple solutions, when we're not sure, when we are confused, what can the teaching tell me? What light can it throw on my confusion? And what does it show that I have to continue to develop if I'm really serious about coming out of suffering? The Buddha's definition of nibbana, enlightenment, is the overcoming, the ending, the ceasing of all greed, all hatred, and all delusion. So this is a time to reflect on our own dilemma in the light of the current situation in the world and in the light of the Buddha's teaching. And I offer these words of reflection for you, not to add to your distress by thinking this is too hard, this is going too far, but to give you a framework for your reflection that goes all the way to the deepest truth and to the highest goal, which is enlightenment. May this teaching be of benefit to all of you, and may the merit of this teaching help us all to attain nibbana. Now, if anyone has any comments or questions about the talk, I'd be happy to respond to them. So the question is, what would the Buddha say about the people who are called up to serve in this war? And the Buddha would have compassion for everyone who is serving, who is in any kind of situation. So the Buddha would have compassion for everyone in this war, whether they're servicemen or women or on either side. And that's the interesting thing to also reflect. Are we talking about the servicemen and women on our side or on their side? Or whose side are we talking about? I know that in the current situation there's been a lot of emphasis on maybe not supporting the war but supporting our servicemen and women because they're doing their duty. But I just like to make it you aware of the fact that they're all volunteers. They're not conscripted into the army. That's a career choice that they've made. And I was reading a few months ago in a weekend magazine article about how good it was that women are now in the submarine service. And I was really struck by the comment of one of the female submariners when she said that with glee that her boyfriend was serving on a ship and she was looking forward to the day when in war games she'd be able to sink his ship. And then she said as a final comment that in the world there are two kinds of ships. There are submarines and there are targets. Now, this is the mindset of someone who's in the services. And this doesn't mean that we should be aggressive or hostile towards those people. But I'm just encouraging the fact to see the fact that this is a choice people have made, and having gone into that situation, then they're going to be encouraged into that kind of thinking. And it's a very glib sort of statement, but if you think about what's behind it, the idea that you're training in order to be able to sink other people, send them to the bottom of the ocean, it's horrific, but it's, you know, tremendous progress that women are now doing it as well as men. So I know that in the current situation there is the attempt not to do the same thing to the servicemen and women now that was done to the servicemen in the time of the Vietnam War, many of whom were conscripted, and one could say they had no choice, but people did conscientiously object to being conscripted and go to prison because of that, rather than go to fight. But in the time of the Vietnam War, servicemen were treated, on their return, were often treated very badly. And this is very interesting point to reflect on, and again comes back to the teaching. In having a very negative attitude towards the servicemen as a way of punishing them for their involvement in the war, I'm sure nobody thought that the consequence of doing that would be that their children would suffer because of the tremendous trauma that those servicemen experienced and which they carried with them into their family life, and which was often expressed in their relationships to their wife and children. And then the children of those servicemen suffered as a result of the trauma that their fathers went through, not only in the fighting but also when they came home. And so this is where we have to be very careful about what we are doing. We think we're doing one thing to one group of people, but the consequences flow on into the future and far wider than we ever could have imagined at the time. And so the Buddha's teaching about harmlessness isn't that we extend harmlessness only to the victims. We extend harmlessness also to the perpetrators. We extend harmlessness and compassion to those on both sides. This is the extent of the compassion of the Buddha. Again, if you can imagine the Buddha being visited by anyone from any side, having done anything, can you imagine him saying or doing anything harmful to that person? No. So the harmlessness, the compassion has to extend to everyone who's involved, even if we don't think that what they're doing is a good thing. Now, again, when someone joins the services, they may do so thinking that it's a good thing, a noble thing, I want to protect my country. Or they might think, this is a good career move, I'm going to get trained in all sorts of things that I could never do out in the world. And so there's no sense of wanting to go and harm and kill. But if you get into that line of work, then it's likely that you're going to be put in a position where you are going to have to go out and act in a violent way. So the short answer to your question is we extend compassion to all beings. Well, the question is that if, as Buddhists, we don't want to do things that are dirty and we stand aside, that Barbara has heard that the teaching, someone said that there'll always be someone who's willing to do the dirty work that isn't Buddhist and who doesn't have the same kind of values. So in that way, it lets us off the hook. So is that an easy way out for us? And what I'm suggesting is that you may come to the point where it's no longer an easy way out, because the fact that you try to uphold your harmlessness is going to mean that you're going to be on the end of something unpleasant. And that's what you have to ask yourself. You know, if I'm not prepared to do this, am I prepared for the consequences? And if one is not doing the action but is supporting the doing of the action mentally, thinking it's a good thing, I'm glad I don't have to do it, then you are creating mental karma. Even though you're not doing the action, you are creating mental karma. So it's not a matter of saying, well, who can I find to do the dirty work and I'll just stand on the sidelines. It's not supporting the doing of the dirty work. Now, that doesn't mean that we act in a situation to protect ourselves or others if there is, violence happening, physical aggression. But it means that one doesn't seek aggression as the solution, and that if one is in a situation of protecting, of seeking to protect, that's what one is trying to do. One isn't trying to harm to the point of killing as a way of dealing with that situation. Now, I know that people have told me that they've been in situations where they've been violently raped and where they've been held hostage. And they said that at that time, they went along with their attacker because they felt that was the only way they could survive. But they determined that if it ever happened again, they would act to kill the person who was assaulting them. They couldn't bear to live with that ordeal again. So this is a kind of experience that we wouldn't wish on anyone. And not having experienced it ourselves in this lifetime, we don't know how we're going to react in that situation. So particularly to cultivate this path, we have to cultivate this path when it's easy. We have to do make the little hard decisions. We have to practice to be harmless when it's not a matter of life and death. We have to see the value in being compassionate before we get to the point where it's really hard life or death situation. We have to see what it means to be driven by our desires and to justify our behaviour on the basis of those desires when it's still a manageable situation before it gets to life and death. If we don't practice, then when we get to hard decisions, we will always take the easy option. The Buddha said that in any unwholesome state of mind which leads on to unwholesome action, there are always two things present. One is a lack of moral shame, a lack of that inner questioning about whether this is a right thing or not. The other things which are always present are a lack of fear of blame at having doing what one is doing, and the next is restlessness in the mind. So not just agitation, but that wanting that something is missing, or I've got to have this to be complete, that restlessness. And the other quality is delusion. And this is the delusion about a self, delusion about what constitutes the being that I am. These are very profound, deep aspects of the teaching, and they can't be realized superficially. They have to be confronted in the most challenging areas of our experience, because that's where we'll find that sense of self, that sense of self-interest, that sense of self-preservation lurking and still coming up with the justifications. Now, with that sense of moral shame, that inner feeling of this is wrong, even in the most difficult situations, people can stand their ground and refuse to participate in acts of aggression or atrocities. So, for example, in the Vietnam War in 1968, there was a massacre of civilians. Almost 500 civilians were killed by a company of American soldiers. And in that company of 100 men, even though the majority were involved in slaughtering men, women and children, and not just slaughtering them by killing them, but doing all sorts of dastardly things to them, there were men in that company who refused to participate in that action and who actually stood their ground and said, no, I'm not going to do this. And not only that, there were other soldiers who came from other companies who saw what was going on and actually came and put themselves between the villagers and the soldiers. Now, the fact that such an atrocity can take place is astounding, but in the context of war, perhaps not astounding. But the fact that some men could stand their ground and not participate, I think, is even more astounding. And that's what gives heart to what we can produce in our life as human beings. Now, these people weren't Buddhist, not that I know of, but they had that sense, very strong sense of this is wrong. And so they stood their ground at the possible cost of their own life. And so it is possible to cultivate this strength of mind, which becomes more valuable than even life itself. Life at any cost is not worth having. So as I said, this is intended to give some points for reflection. When we think we've got an easy solution to the problems in the world, whether we think it's this side or that side or this leader or that leader or this is the way to get around this, it's always more complex than that. And I encourage all of us to keep looking at where we can find some answers which won't lead us further into delusion.